Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Call his wife in 405. McMonagle here with you on the fan. 888-808-1019. I got you for another hour until the warm-up show comes your way on this Tuesday morning, where hopefully we can put to bed the giant stability, what should they do conversation, because it is over and we could stop arguing about it and stop fighting about it. And now it's just a matter of what do the Giants do at the quarterback position? That's the most important thing. There's no doubt about it. Even John Mara, who I didn't think acquitted himself well yesterday, other than making sure everyone knows how upset he is, which I don't think anyone doubts. Just wasn't a lot of confidence in his decision-making. And not a lot of confidence for two guys that he's bringing back off of two miserable seasons. You're going to make a decision like that that you know the entire fan base is against. You know, you shouldn't spend half your time saying you understand why the whole fan base is against it. Try and convince us, John. But now that's over, hopefully. And now it's just a matter of how they actually go about handling their business with the third pick and what they decide to do with the quarterback position, because he is right. It's the most important thing, and without question. And we can have this debate whether or not teams are too focused on the quarterback and you should build the team before getting the quarterback and all the crap that goes around that conversation. The New York Giants, the quarterback position has been the number one thing that's held them back. I mean, we could talk about the defense going up and down the field, the poor drafting, the busts of Evan Neal at the offensive line position and the poor play of the offensive line and, you know, passing on Saquon Barkley and everything else that's cost this team, no doubt, over the last 2 years. But the number one thing is that there is no quarterback play. Plain and simple. Daniel Jones wasn't very good even when they were winning the first year of Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. And they've had zero quarterback play in the last 2 years. And that needs to change. And for me, I still want to get the young quarterback. They need to figure out a way to draft that young quarterback. We'll find out what happens. We'll find out if there's always another quarterback that emerges in the draft. There's always another guy. We saw Joe Milton play very well for New England. I don't know if anybody takes that overly serious, but he did show a skill set. There's J.J. McCarthy. There's other ways to get young quarterbacks. Hey, there might be Sam Darnold. And I'm telling you right now, I would not be opposed to Sam Darnold being the Giants' starting quarterback. I wouldn't be. I wouldn't be opposed to that. He's still young enough where he's the franchise guy. I believe in his ability. Now, again, he's Sam Darnold coming back to this building, to this city, scares me a little bit. The way he played the other night scares me a little bit. And we'll see how he plays in this playoff game. But I actually think, if you give, again, he's a veteran, no doubt. He's been around. He's been on multiple teams, right? He had the years with the Jets. He went to Carolina. He's been with San Francisco and now obviously with Minnesota, where he's led a team to 14 wins. I do think that's the kind of quarterback you could bring in here with this coach, Brian Daboll. Give him that still young, impressionable might not be the right word, and certainly, you know, developing him would probably be a stretch as well at this point in his career, but working with him, making him better, I still think that's something Brian Daboll, I've seen him work with quarterbacks, and that's the one thing I believe he can do. So I'd be open to that. I need the franchise guy. I need their guy. And if they make the decision to go pay him $40 million a year, whatever it's going to cost, that would certainly be their guy. And that would be a way. You bring Sam Darnold in here, now you could talk about being on the hot seat. Now you can, which would suck as well. If you're going to allow these two, none of it makes sense unless you give them some rope. Because even if you want to say, oh, well, it's not the young quarterback, you're not developing the young quarterback, it's a veteran quarterback here, but you've just allowed those two to pay someone that kind of money. You're either giving up draft capital, you're giving up money, you're allowing the franchise quarterback decision, which is the most important decision a franchise can make, quite honestly. That's it. Where is the franchise going is based, number one, on what you do at the quarterback position. And you are going to allow, one way or another, And Joe Shane told you he won't make a home. He won't make a Hail Mary. He's not going to trade up necessarily a ton of picks to get him. He will not make a move in self-defense. He will not make a move in self-perseverance. He will not make a move to secure his job. He's going to do the right thing because he believes, and I believe him when he talks, that he's his job is safe. That's how he talks. Joe Shane doesn't show any fear of losing his job. Playoff mandate? What are you, crazy? I don't have a playoff mandate. So he feels confident in the decision, but as an organization, if you allow these two guys coming off of these two seasons to make the decision one way or another, whether it's paying a veteran quarterback, now there's always ways out of it. We're seeing what's happened with Atlanta. We're going to see what happens with Aaron Rodgers, Daniel Jones. It takes some time. It might not take the entire length of the contract, but it'll take some time. But if you allow them to make a decision, whether it's drafting a quarterback with their first pick, certainly trading up to get that quarterback, and or paying a veteran, then I'm sorry, you should be locked into them seeing that process out on some level. Or at least more than just they better impress me. Like, granted, if you bring in a veteran quarterback and the team stinks again, and the offense stinks again, and you pay Sam Darnold a lot of money to score, to average 14 points at home, okay, yes. But if you see an improved offense in any way, shape, or form, and you see this coach working with a quarterback, a young quarterback in particular, then how the hell do you move on from it? You say you need to be in a better mood? Well, you get in a better mood, because if you're going to stick with him, it doesn't make sense to fire him after 1 year. And despite some of that feeling and talk from the owner, I think it's more in the moment. I think he wanted more to show the despair to the fan base, because when it comes down to it, it's illogical to continue in this path and only give it one more year unless it's an out-and-out disaster. And I guess that's a possibility with the schedule coming up next year. But if you draft a young quarterback or you bring in a veteran quarterback and this offense scores points, and they're in the right direction, specifically with a young quarterback, and you lose because the defense didn't play well, or you lose close games that, you know, a young quarterback made a mistake or two in the games, and you have a down season against a tough schedule, but you saw development of a young quarterback, you'd be a fool to move on from that point. You'd be a fool to allow them to make that decision and then force said young quarterback or high-priced veteran on another regime and allow them to start in the same place you allowed them to start. You've had previous failures, learn from them. You failed with Daniel Jones because you made the decision to move on from an offensive coach in Pat Shurmur year one. Don't do that again. You made a poor decision by forcing Daniel Jones onto this new regime. Don't do that again. It's either time to cut bait now, which you didn't do, or it's time to show more faith in these two. So what I heard from John Mara as a New York Giant fan, even though I'm in the few who believe it ultimately was the right decision to make, the lack of confidence in the decision. And it feels like making the decision for the wrong reasons, only just because I don't want to make a decision, even though it was right, makes me feel pretty lousy heading into today. But we'll see what the Giants do next. Obviously, a million coaching decisions for the Jets as well, as they've continued to add names to the long, long list of head coaches and general managers they will interview over the next coming weeks. And I still think it's in their back. I want everybody back off this 2 minutes. Well, I must be crazy. I must be crazy. I want the quarterback back with the Jets. I want the coaches and GM back with the Giants. All this losing has driven me as crazy as John Mara. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Mark in Manhattan. What's up, Mark?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm okay. You know, I'm the guy, along with a lot of other people, who've been arguing with you about Saquon Barkley, but that's not why I'm calling.
Okay.
I'm calling because, I mean, and I think we touched on it before. I know you have tons and tons of callers, so you don't remember this, but I do. And I think you touched on it before, and I realize what it is with you that I picked up.
Okay.
What it is with you is that you are enamored in the system of professional sports, and I think that's a beautiful thing. The problem is, I think that it blinds you from seeing the truth. John Mara, I listen. It's unfortunate. I was born a Giants fan. It's in my blood. Grandfather, father, all the way back. It's just what it is.
Right.
The problem is that guys like you and myself is that we have to detach ourselves from the fact that these guys are lifers. Mara is a lifer. I understand that. But that does not mean he's a good decision maker.
Oh, I agree.
We just have to just let it go. Let it go. It doesn't mean that we're hating them or hating on them. It's the writing is on the wall. We've been limping through the last few years of Eli Manning's contract, and here we are now still.
Yeah.
And it's all been in his decision-making. Yes, he's letting them do their job. That's what a good owner is supposed to do. But every once in a while, come on. Put your foot down. And I think that's what you're dancing around. You don't want to say it. Put your foot down. I'm not going to say anything derogatory. But he needs to put his foot down. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I mean, with what, though? With what decision? You're going to pick and choose which one? He's made terrible decisions. I've been kind of killing him all morning. I was disappointed how he handled the press conference. I'm upset that his decision making has led us here. And I kind of agree that at some point, this is what I'm calling for. He kind of has put his foot down here and said, I'm finally going to stick with my thought process and my beliefs. I hired these two because I believed in them. And maybe I didn't put them in the best situation. And instead of, I've done it the last three times, firing the coach off of miserable seasons and making another decision. And maybe I'll try moving forward with these two and pushing through the bad years and see if I can get something out of it on the other side. Like what? You wanted him to make the decision on Saquon Barkley. That's where he should put his foot down. He put his foot down with Ben McAdoo. Hey, you're going to bench Eli Manning and lose the team and be a loser? Okay, you're gone. Hey, Pat Shurmur, you're going to be an average head coach like you were with the Cleveland Browns, and you're going to lose, a bunch of games the first 2 years and show me nothing. I mean, now that I look back on it, he probably did enough with Daniel Jones. I wish they would have probably kept him as much as I think he's an inept head coach, but then he put his foot down and fired him. Hey, Joe Judge, I'd love to keep you, but you can't run quarterback sneaks up against our own goal line and then attack another NFL head coach and talk your way into getting fired. I have to put my foot down and fire you. He's been putting his foot down. And look where it's gotten him. His decisions have been brutal, awful, Gettleman, terrible. I'm hoping he learns from those decisions. But there's no make them. I don't know. You're going to pick and choose which decisions you want him to put his foot down on. Oh, put your foot down on, put your foot down, keep Saquon Barkley. I'm sure that's the decision you wanted. Who knows what else he wanted to do? Who knows? There might have been decisions, that you might not like. And he put his foot down. I think the owner needs to allow the guys to do their job. And I think John Mara's done it. I think the idea, the stories of him meddling or, forcing family members into the organization, and into the decision-making process and the scouting department. I mean, that's a different discussion that we've had for a long time. But the idea that he's telling Joe Shane what to do, I don't buy that at all. That's why I had a caller previously who's like, he's the reason they started DeVito instead of Locke because he wanted to give the fan base something. I doubt that very much. I don't think he's that kind of guy. I think I think Brian Daboll did that. It's one of the things Brian Daboll had to answer for in my mind. Why did you start Tommy DeVito? And then when he got hurt, obviously he went to Drew Locke. And when he was healthy again, you stuck with Drew Locke. It wasn't like Drew Locke was playing well. Like, why not? If you're going to say he's the better quarterback, why would in 1 week stick with, it made no sense how he handled the quarterback situation. Like, Brian Daboll didn't have a good year in any way, shape, or form. And Joe Shane has had two miserable drafts and one really good one. But I don't think it's about the owner putting his foot down. I don't. Eddie in the Bronx. What's up, Eddie?
What's up, man? I am a suffering Giants fan.
Yeah, we all are.
I went, what was it, about a year ago, I went and got a Giants tattoo on my arm, and I'm like, people at work tell me, you got to get that arm removed. But it's crazy because I think personally, I think they should stick with Dable. I was probably in the minority. I felt that they should stick with him.
Yeah.
Just want to quick on a sidebar. I'm like, as one of my friends is a Jets fan, he said, watch the Jets end up with somebody like Doug Peterson. I don't know.
I doubt it very much.
But getting back to the Giants, I'm like, I think what happens is, I think basically it is Mara to a degree, because I do think that the Giants value character in their players more than they do play on the field. I do believe that, because I think they look at Saquon's character, and I think a lot of people look at I never thought Saquon should be. I thought they should have traded Saquon a couple of years ago. I just think that building your team around a running back, and I think a lot of that has to do with this new age in fantasy football that you need a running back. I always tell people, like, oh, well, we could have signed Saquon. I'm like, well, except for that outlier 1 year, how much did we win when Saquon was here?
No, of course. You're making overall, I agree with your point there, Eddie, but I think you're going to, I mean, it's... When you say it's a question of character over play on the field, Saquon Barkley gave you both. Like, Saquon Barkley gave you great character, and he was an unbelievable player on the field. Your point about the running back is more valid, and I don't think anyone's saying, like, this year has been kind of a year that's been the outlier, because prior to this year, I don't think anybody had that sentiment you're talking about the fantasy football. I think most people inside the NFL felt like the running back isn't a position to build around, and the NFL isn't, and the running back isn't a position of value. We've been talking about the NFL running back contract for how many years now? This year has kind of been the outlier where Saquon Barkley went and got paid and really helped the Eagles, and Derrick Henry, obviously, leaving Tennessee to go to Baltimore made an impact. Aaron Jones has made an impact. Josh Jacobs has made an impact. So it's kind of been Gibbs with Detroit has been unbelievable. And, you know, so you're seeing... And he's a high draft pick. That's why I mentioned him. There's others with free agents. They were all impactful. He's a high draft pick. He's been majorly impactful. So, like, this 1 year has kind of been maybe a revert back to, you know, old school football, where the running back has had a really high impact in this particular season. But I think most of the time over the last handful of years, we've understood that the running back isn't the best way to build your team. And I hated Barkley when they picked him. And I thought they should have traded him a couple of years ago, but I don't know where the character over play on the field comes into that equation, though.
Oh, I mean, there is certain things. I thought that I think towards the end of the season, I'm like, towards the end of the season when they had him, I felt like you could have traded him out of the conference, traded him to Houston. But, you know, but then the only thing is like, I will say, those running backs that you mentioned, pretty much all of those running backs, Jacobs and Barkley, all of those running backs went to much better situations also.
Oh, no doubt.
But I do want to ask this question, because it's been kind of coming in. Like, people say another quarterback is going to emerge, because now when you look at Dable and these guys, now you're right. If you're going to keep these guys, you got to give them a vote of confidence at least for the next 2 to 3 years, because now – it's almost like you're going to be, like, reaching for a quarterback. And I'm looking at if both of those quarterbacks come off the board, do you look at, like, somebody like a Jackson Dart? Because I think he is an interesting guy. But the thing is do you sit there and do you reach for a quarterback?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. But the thing is you're going to need a guy. And I think that Mara sat on these guys. You let Gettleman meddle for too long. You took too long to make it. Like, the thing is, you took 6 years to figure out what you had in Daniel Jones. That was too long.
Yeah.
The reality is that you took too long in these processes, and it's like, to me, it's just one of those things where we felt like, oh, we didn't give him this, or we didn't give him that, and it was just like, listen, after a couple of years, if you're not that guy, you got to go. And they sat on him. Again, I think part of it was because of the character thing, and I'm like, and he was a Cutcliffe guy, and he was an Eli Manning clone to be, and they love Eli Manning, and that was just, I think everything that Gettleman did, some of the things were good, but some of the bad things, they let it fester.
I'm sorry. My finger hit the button. I apologize. I cut you off there. But I got your point. Daniel Jones, it was a little bit about his character. I'm sure they respected the hell out of him and how tough he was. And he had his moments, and he did win a road playoff game and showed promise year one. I think a lot of it was, you know, they felt like, well, I mean, it's the winning that season, because ultimately, if they don't win that year, if Shane and Dable, if Dable doesn't coach the hell out of him and turn him from being one of the most, if not the most turned over quarterback in the NFL to one of the least turnover quarterbacks in the NFL, they don't sign him. They won a road playoff game. This all can be traced back. The Shane and Dable era and where we are today with most of the fan base being unhappy and the owner making a decision that, quite honestly, he did a poor job of making us feel confident about, can all stem back to the winning of that year. The winning of year one hurt this team. And that's another thing that sucks. You can't even look back fondly on the winning, because it put the team in a worse, more precarious situation, because they felt like they had to pay the quarterback. If they would have won 7 games that year, they would have moved on from Daniel Jones. They would have never paid him that money, and they would have had another quarterback in here. I don't know what they would have done. I don't know who it would have been. You know, if they won 7 or 8 games and didn't make it, they're in the middle of the draft. Are they in a position to draft a quarterback? I don't know. But I don't think they would have kept Daniel Jones. I don't. And they certainly wouldn't have had to pay him $40 million if they did. They might have gotten away with a 1-year deal or something like that. But him winning that road playoff game, that it's not easy to win road playoff games. They went into Minnesota and beat a 12-win team. They had to pay him. They felt like they were in no other position but to do that. And that put them back. And then when you talk about character with Daniel Jones, at the beginning when they forced him on, it was that when John Mara kind of forced him on this new regime, it was that we let him down. We were the reason for his failures. We changed coaches on him. We changed offensive coordinators on him. We haven't been able to figure out the offensive line for him. Like that's what impacted keeping him. And then they had the winning season, and Brian Dable did a hell of a job. And that's why I refuse to believe, John Mara was too deep into his feelings yesterday and wanted to make sure you knew he was unhappy, that he's doing this, but he understands and he's unhappy with 3 wins, as opposed to, you know, getting that point across, but giving us more of a reason to believe. Like, it was very difficult to come out of that feeling anything other than, well, I don't want to make a decision and we'll see what happens. And, you know, it better change next year. Like, to me, Brian Dable and Joe Shane should have been given another opportunity to rebuild, not another opportunity to have a winning season. And if that's too much for your blood, if that's too rich for your blood and you don't want to give them another opportunity to rebuild, then fire them now. Like, that was the choice before you. Fire them now, or say, because of the quarterback situation, because of that win, because of Daniel Jones's injuries, because they had to get rid of him last year, the losing got ridiculously ugly. They had a good draft class, and I do believe he can coach from what he showed me year one, and I'm going to give them another crack at this thing, as opposed to, well, you know, I really don't want to make a move now, so I'm going to give them one more year to impress me. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And despite that's how it felt listening to John Mara yesterday, I still believe when push comes to shove, if they get a young quarterback, he will not make that change and hinder the opportunity to develop a young quarterback. 888, he just did it with Daniel Jones. He saw what making coaching changes year one does. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll come back. Take your phone calls for the next half hour until the warm-up show at 5. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. All right, 434. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. It is Yankee Hot Stove. We could do a little bit of baseball here. We talk so much football. We'll get into it more tomorrow. As we have a 5-hour midnight ride tomorrow morning. So we'll get into a couple more things. We'll get into more of the Knicks debate after their third consecutive loss after a 9-game winning streak. And the questions about the minutes will always rear their ugly head whenever a Thibodeau team is losing, and especially when they can't, you know, when they have no legs to shoot, when Cat's dealing with the injury and, you know, they look lackluster defensively for a large portion of the game against a Orlando team that came in with their top 4 scorers down. A gritty, you know, tough Orlando team, but still one of the tougher losses the Knicks have had all year. And it's, you know, while we're still waiting for Mitchell Robinson, Tibbs is probably going to have to trust his bench a little bit more, because I don't know if you can, and especially on nights where you're down Karl-Anthony Towns. I mean, you're just going to have to over the long stretch. Like, these guys are going to get tired. And you're asking a lot from your starters, especially McBride down for a bit, and like, what's gone on here? And this is going to be the conversation every time. I mean, this is the issue, right? Because the Knicks are about as talented as they've ever been, right? It's been one of the more fun watches, that 9-game winning streak, the grittiness, the toughness, the winning games with offensive rebounds, some of the stuff we saw last year to go along with the offensive prowess and Mikal Bridges, finding himself a little bit, and Karl-Anthony Towns being as good as he's been, and OG Anunoby deserving of being an all-star, and the triple doubles of Josh Hart and all the fun stuff that we've experienced. Anytime they lose, the question with this team, the question with this coach is going to be the minutes. And can they play this way for this long and make it through the attrition of the season? And I don't know if we're there just yet. Sometimes it's just, the peaks and valleys of a season, and they're not playing particularly well and they were down one of their better players. But for a team that has the aspirations and the goals that this team has, it's, over the course of the regular season, there has to be a plan to get these guys through it a little bit easier. And you have to start trusting guys. And unless you play them, you're not gonna build that trust. And, some of the guys, Cameron Payne and some of the different guys have played well at times. But this is what's going to come up. This is the conversation every time the Knicks go through this. Every time. Anytime the Knicks go through a downturn, it's about the coaching style. It's about the minutes played every single time. And this will be the conversation heading in to the playoffs. Can you get through a 7-game series playing the minutes? This is what we talk about every single time. And right now, you could tell, last night in particular, tired. I mean, when you see the numbers from 3-point, when you see shooting 18% from behind the arc, when you see the way they play defense at times, when you saw Orlando down their top four scorers being able to have as many open threes in the perimeter defense, I mean, that's what it is. And they went through an easy schedule through December, right? They had their run of it, and they played really well at times. They played really well for a lot of that 9-game winning streak, obviously. And they showed you a bunch of different things that you love, more than just the offense. Like, they showed you some gritty defense. They showed you, winning games with toughness and rebounding. And obviously, like I said, Josh Hart and everything. And the style of play, I mean, I think they are as dangerous as any team in the league. And I think they have a legitimate chance. I think they have a legitimate chance to be an NBA champion. But they're going to have to find a way to get to the end of the season ready to roll through what will be, the second season of the NBA playoffs. And that's the fear of this team, and that's the fear of the style of play, and that's the fear of this coach, is that he's incapable of opening up the bench, he's incapable of limiting the minutes, he's incapable of finding a way to get this team primed and ready. And now, you don't want load management, clearly, and all this stuff, that we wrestle with, that the NBA wrestles with, but at the same time, you got to have this team ready to play because, this game against Orlando isn't the end of the world. But and Mitchell Robinson coming back will definitely help this team whenever he does come back. But they've got to find answers so that this team isn't exhausted. And last night they looked exhausted. And that's going to be the talk anytime they lose a game like this. And then we get to the baseball news, as Jeff Passan came out with a couple of different things today, both Met and Yankee related. And the Yankee one is they are talking to the San Diego Padres about Luis Arraez, the 3-time batting champion. And oddly enough, it's been met with like mixed results. And I'll tell you this, I don't love him as a player. In fact, I think he's slightly overrated. Yes, he's a quality, he's won batting titles. He gets sprayed all over the field. He puts the bat on the ball. He doesn't strike out. the way the Yankees are being built right now, it's kind of, you know, they've been built with pitching and defense, right? You need offense, no doubt. But he is Gleyber Torres had the ability to be an excellent, or a very, I shouldn't say excellent. Gleyber Torres has the ability to be a damn good second baseman. He's got the range, he's got the arm, he's got the skill set. The problem with Gleyber Torres is the stupid mistakes that he would constantly make. The lackluster plays, the stupid mistakes, the boneheaded plays in the worst moments, the prone, you know, to the critical error. That was the problem with Gleyber Torres. Luis Arraez can't play second. He's just not a good second baseman. Doesn't have the skill set to be a second baseman. Doesn't have the range. Doesn't have the arm. Like, he just is not a very talented infielder. Where I felt like Gleyber could be, just never was. Because of his inability to not make the mistake. But with this team right now, where defense is so critical, and how much they've changed in that way, and all the talk about that last year, and at that particular position, and he's not much of a base runner either. He's slow. He's not much of a base runner. He's not much of an athlete. He's just a damn good hitter. Having said that, Yankee fans, you are nuts if you wouldn't want to do this, because here's my fear. DJ LeMahieu is going to be your starting third baseman this year. Do you understand that? Like, DJ LeMahieu is going to be the starting third baseman. They're paying him $15 million. The stories are coming out now that here's why he could still be the answer. He's, you know, it's, they need another infielder of quality. And I'm sorry, give me a better way to help this offense, which, again, as much as I agree, he's going to hurt the defense that they're trying to rebuild there. And he's not going to bring them any, you know, ability on the base path. And he's not an athlete. All he is a 320 hitter who has a career 370 on base percentage. Would you like to put that in front of Aaron Judge? I mean, the offense, which it always comes down to in the postseason, which they still need to have answers for and replace what Juan Soto and Gleyber Torres bring them. Now, you can't replace Juan Soto with one player, and Bellinger is, you know, the outfielder who will technically, you know, one for one replace him in the lineup, not replace the, you know, ability or the stats or the production, but will replace him in the lineup. I mean, they are a much worse offensive team right now. And if you can tell me, and I know he doesn't walk a lot, I don't care. He's a 370 on base guy. He's a three-time batting champion. I can have a 370, 380 on base guy in front of Aaron Judge, I'll take on whatever ills he brings, because I cannot. I had this epiphany last week because I know it's going to happen. And it's going to be the ultimate Yankees don't go for that last move. Sure, they had a great offseason. They did this, they did that, some shrewd trades. You know, they got much better pitching and defense, blah, 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 blah. But they don't have that killer instinct to go get that player. And DJ LeMahieu is my starting third baseman. I don't want to see that. So I'm open to trading for Nolan Arenado if it works out and they can get the money down to a reasonable number. They still have to go out and trade Marcus Stroman. I'll live with the poor defense of Luis Arraez at second base and Jazz Chisholm at the lesser position of third base. Or his lesser position at third base as opposed to second base. I'll live with it if I'm going to get a 380 on base guy in front of Aaron Judge. That changes the entire lineup right now. That moves Jazz down in the lineup. It moves Volpe down in the lineup. That would be a huge addition. It would only be, I believe it's a one-year thing. Like, that would be the addition that this lineup would. I don't love him as a player. I don't. I think he's slightly overrated. His slugging percentage is hideous. His OPS isn't very good for a guy who wins batting titles. He doesn't do much else. But as it happens, a 380 on base percentage is exactly what this team needs right in front of Judge, because right now they don't have that guy. So we'll get into this more tomorrow, but there's several options. Gavin Lux got traded to Cincinnati, so that's one less option for the Yankees. They need an infielder. I cannot go into the season with DJ LeMahieu as my starting third baseman. And I'm telling you, if it comes down to him or Oswaldo Cabrera to start the year for certain, they're going to give it to the guy they're paying $15 million to. Mark my words. As long as he's healthy, they will. And I can't have it. And then Jeff Passan with Pete Alonso and the thought that it's more and more likely that it will be a reunion with the Mets and it will be a short-term deal. And I'm still not so sure about that. And we'll see. Listen, Jeff Passan is the best in the business, and I think a short-term deal works better for the New York Mets than anybody else because he's got the qualifying offer attached to him, and you're going to give up draft picks. And you don't want to give up draft picks for a guy who's going to be there 1 year. You don't want to pay Pete Alonso $30-plus million and give up a draft pick for 1 year. So if it's a short-term deal, I do agree the Mets make the most sense, but I don't know why. But I don't know if Pete wants to take a short-term deal from the Mets. One, he wasn't very good under the prospect of another prove-it season, which is this would be if it's a two-year deal with an opt-out or a three-year deal with an opt-out after year one. That's another prove-it deal for the better contract because if he hits free agency at 31, maybe. If he's hitting free agency at 33, good luck. So he's got one more year to make the big payday if he has the big season. So now you're putting another prove-it year, which I don't think there's any question affected Pete in some way. And maybe he'd be better at it year two under that circumstance, but it clearly affected him. I don't want to put him under that thing. And something tells me that Pete doesn't want to take it, and he's going to wait and wait and wait. And I just feel like whether it's the Angels, whether it's the Giants, someone might pony up and give him something here for a team that's desperate to make some noise as this thing falls apart, as the markets continue, and Bregman would go, and some of the other options to make a splash would fall apart. Like I'm still not there on this short-term deal with the Mets, but it would make sense for the Mets. I just don't know if Pete Alonso wants to do it. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll finish with your phone calls. We can talk a little baseball there. Again, 5 hours tomorrow. We'll do more baseball. We'll do some other things as opposed to just the ineptitude of our football teams and how we could possibly believe they could move forward with the team, with the gentleman running the operation. 888-808-1019. Quick break. We'll come right back. All right, 4:52, last 2 minutes of the show. Let's get to the calls, 888-808-1019. Again, five-hour midnight ride tomorrow. We'll get into some other things. But today, mainly football heavy. The Giants owner is a problem. He's a problem. Even when he does what I believe, and who am I? But when he does what I believe is the right thing, he still does. I mean, the way he spoke yesterday, I thought, went a long way into distrust with him and what the Giants are trying to do. Because if you're going to bring these guys back, you have to show more confidence in them than he showed yesterday. I think he was too focused on making sure you understand that he's as upset about it as you are, as opposed to showing confidence in this decision. And we'll see what happens. But if they get the young quarterback, they're not going anywhere. And Joe Shane can tell you all day long that he won't make a Hail Mary decision in his own self-interest. Nobody's going to look at a team that doesn't have a quarterback drafting third, drafting a quarterback as a Hail Mary. They're going to tell you they believed in the guy. And there's no way this owner, if the quarterback plays even slightly well, is going to do what he did with Daniel Jones and give that young quarterback a new head coach. It just doesn't make any sense. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Eric in Ronkonkoma. What's up, Eric?
Yeah, hey, C-Man, good morning. I know you're up against it.
Yeah, got it real quick.
I just finished changing the tire, so I'm going to keep it quick.
Okay, you're all right? So on the side of the road, or what happened? You okay?
Yeah, one of my guys had a flat. I had to go help him change it. It's pretty, the cold and wind and all that garbage.
Sure.
We're good.
Good.
But I like the idea of the offensive coach for the Jets.
Yeah.
The question is, who's probably the best guy out there right now, you know, offensive wise, you know, that they get, because most of the guys I've heard of are really defensive minded.
Well, I mean, the obvious answer to that, and I guess they're, you know, not gonna, he's not expected to be a candidate for the Jets, Ben Johnson, but
yeah, right. Aside from him.
Yeah, I mean, but that sounds like that's not going to happen. I mean, yeah, you're right. Most of the names. So they've interviewed Vrabel, and we'll still talk about him as a possibility until he's not, but it sounds like he's not. Ron Rivera, defensive guy, but I would not consider him. Rex Ryan, Brian Flores, those are some of the bigger names. They're all defensive.
I don't want Rex. I really don't.
Yeah, quite honestly. And I was surprised, and I'm sorry, Eric, I want to get to a couple calls, but thank you. I was surprised how, I mean, not really surprised, I guess, but Rex Ryan, you know, he's just, I don't know how you could think that's good for you to get the job, to be out there just, oh, I'm the best candidate, I'm the best, I'm better than everybody else. It's not even close. Like, you sound like an idiot. Like, I'm sorry, Rex, I respect you and I like you, and for a time there, I thought maybe it even made sense, but like, the last couple of years were bad, you failed in Buffalo, you've been doing TV, and you're a better candidate than a former head coach like Brian Flores, who is leading a defense that just won, that's won 14 games. I know they had a bad game against Detroit, but like, you're clear. It's not even close. It's not even close that you're the best candidate for this job. It's not even close. It's not even close. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
Tonight is your night, bro.
Tonight is your night, bro.
Real quick on the Yanks, or actually the Giants, I'm tired of listening to this owner. I feel like he's trying to be angry, but also giving these guys a pass. He cannot be trusted. I feel like I'm done with him, but there's nothing I could do. I'll check back in a few years. And then the Knicks. It's not about the benching or the time. There's no defensive intensity this year. And maybe we sold our soul to the devil, but I feel like the defense just does not show up, and they didn't have four of their top scorers last night. We did not show up.
Correct.
Last night.
No, like, well, I mean, but the question is, are they, like, we've seen defensive toughness. It's not like it's
tonight
is your night, bro. There has been there's been some games, and certainly last night is one of them. And you can't always put it at the feet of tired and minutes and all that stuff. I get it. I do think, you know, with, you know, Bridges early on wasn't playing well on any level, wasn't good defensively, wasn't good offensively. I do think he's a better defensive player than he's shown. I mean, heart. I think Cat's been more tenacious defensively than you know, I would have expected from someone with the soft persona, although I wouldn't call him a great defensive rim protector, and I think Mitchell Robinson will help, obviously, that in that department when he comes back. Obviously, Anunoby is one of the better perimeter defenders in the sport. Like, I think they can be better defensively than they've been, but I think we've seen times where the effort is there and sometimes when it's not. But, you know, when you go on a 9-game winning streak and then you lose 3 in a row, and the corresponding thing to the defense was also the ineptitude at the 3-point line. So now you've got lackluster defense against a man, a team that is down their top four scorers, and you can't shoot. That speaks to legs. It speaks to legs. And that's going to be the question with this team, like it or not, warranted or not. That's going to be the question. Tony in Montreal. What's up, Tony?
How you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy? Question. Yeah.
C-Mac.
Yes.
C-Mac.
Yes.
How much load management are you entitled to at WFAN in New York? I'm just joking, because I hear these guys are always load managing.
Yes.
I figure if you take the night off, you might not come back the next day. That's what my job's like. If I told anyone I'll load manage, they say, yeah, load manage somewhere else.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know.
Listen.
I get some load management in this. Now we're good till July. We're good till like June or July, buddy. Don't worry about it.
Okay, so just real quick. Flores and Aaron Glenn,
yeah,
two amazing defensive coaches. I would go with Glenn. I really would build a defense.
Yeah, listen, Glenn just rose his stock the way that defense, you know, with all the injuries, played against one of the more potent and big play offenses in Sam Darnold and the Minnesota Vikings and O'Connell. I mean, that was a big time performance in a big time game and a very important game for Detroit. So he rose his stock. Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not opposed to any of them. I'm in the camp of leaning towards the offensive coach, especially if I don't have a quarterback and I'm going to look to get one. I just think that's the trend in the NFL right now. It doesn't mean a defensive coach can't be successful, and I still would have Vrabel as my top guy because of his consistent and winning and proof that he could be the guy, but I'd lean offense. But that's it for me. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. I'll catch you tomorrow at midnight. Bye-bye.